Welcome to FemTech at Work, the podcast where we explore the intersection of technology, health, and women's empowerment in the workplace, hosted by me, Maaike Steinebach. This show will dive into the innovative solutions transforming women's health and well-being in the workplace. Join us as we chat with FemTech founders, industry leaders, and change makers who are pioneering advancements in FemTech and women's health. We discuss everything: menstrual health, reproductive rights, menopause, but also the challenges women face in the workplace and how innovation can overcome them. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting your FemTech journey, FemTech at Work is here to inspire and inform you about the future of health and wellness for women everywhere. Tune in and be part of the conversation. Hi, good morning, and welcome to this new episode of my podcast, FemTech at Work, with today's guest, Dr. Choi. Dr. Choi Hua, I'll be calling her in this episode, is the founder of WomenX Biotech. Welcome, Hua.
Hello, I'm Hua. Thank you, Mike, for introducing
me. Yeah, very happy to have you on this podcast. Obviously, you're the founder of WomenX Biotech here in Hong Kong. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and what inspired you to found the company?
Okay, so I'm a female scientist. In my past, I'm a 100% scientist. So I started my research when I was 20 years old, and I work in ovarian cancer disease pathogenesis. So what was that? I follow a professor from Harvard Medical School from the OBGYN department. And what we are working on was about how seeds are formed in ovary and how these seeds turn into cancer. We study the genes and the proteins that regulate like seeds formations and the later cancer formations and how cancer cells migrate to other parts of the body. And from there, I understand that it's very hard to detect ovarian cancer because ovary is buried in the body. Except using ultrasound, unless you use ultrasound or some invasive procedure, it's very hard to find out there's some problem with the ovary. And this is also why ovarian cancer is the deadliest gynecological cancer and is causing a lot of women death.
Mm.
Yeah, so I have this OBGYN background, and this inspired me to work on different detections on female diseases. And the idea of establishing WomenX is because driven by the urgent need to address female reproductive diseases, such as cervical cancer, which have a significant impact on the lives of millions of women worldwide. And these diseases can be lethal and often, like what I said, obvious symptoms, making early detections and diagnosis crucial. And because I have some personal experience too, I have a relative, she is my aunt, and she had fever for 2 weeks. And then she tried to find some clinic and then talked to the doctor explaining that she had fever. And she worried that she had some problem with the reproductive system.
Mm.
In the end, she just took some painkiller to kill the fever and that's all. And after 2 weeks, she couldn't bear the pain. And then she went to the hospital. And the doctor did a very, very detailed check and found that she has very severe infections in her uterus and she had to undergo operations and remove her whole reproductive system.
Wow.
And when she was back home, she talked to me and said her life could be much better if there was early diagnosis of female diseases.
Yeah.
So from there, I started to think about, okay, we really need something to tell women what's happening in the reproductive system. And why do I focus on screening HPV and cervical cancer? Because at that time, I met another woman. She is my friend, and she is in the sexually assaulted case, and she has to submit some documents about her HPV status. And she talked to me and said she didn't want to do any more invasive procedure for any female reproductive system related conditions or diseases.
Mm.
So she urged me to find some alternatives for her Like, how can she get the report, get HPV check without doing any invasive procedures at the clinic or in front of any male doctors? So I started to search on the web and found that there was no alternatives for that. And then I told her and she was very disappointed. And she asked me, so can you invent a solution for me, like find a solution for me or invent something that can help me collect the maybe vaginal discharge or collect the HPV samples without any invasive procedure? And this also remind me, so when I was in US, there was 3 annual checkup, like complimentary perks, staff perks. So every year I went to the hospital and did this checkup. And the doctor always suggests me to do the pap smear test. Indeed, I have never taken any pap smear test due to some cultural concerns or so busy schedule, because the schedule is to my busy schedule. So I never take any pap smear. I started to think about why I don't have alternatives. And I found that because we don't have the technology. We don't have the technology for solving this problem. So many different kinds of women, they have barriers blocking them to receive cervical cancer screening. From there, I started to think about how can I find a technology or how can I make some invention that can break this barrier. Yeah, that's the story about Womenic.
Wow, amazing. Well, firstly, you're such an amazing friend that you actually started a whole company to support your friend. But I think I speak on behalf of a lot of women that we are very excited about the work that you're doing, because it creates options for women, right? It creates alternatives to the traditional pap smear. And basically, it means that women can choose how they work on this detection. Maybe just coming back to a few other things that you said. Why is HPV such a big problem for women?
Because 95% of cervical cancer is caused by persistent infections of HPV. And from our clinical study in Hong Kong, we found that around 20% of women in Hong Kong are having high-risk HPV infections. And if the HPV infection is ignored and the woman is not informed of the HPV status, there is a chance that the HPV in the end will transform the cervical cells into cancer cells and cervical cancer happens.
Yeah. But I think it is good to know, though, that HPV is a virus. So HPV in itself, as long as you don't have the bad strains, is not necessarily going to automatically get you cancer, right? But it is important for both men and women, because it's a problem that affects men as well, right?
Yeah. HPV also affects men, like causing the anal cancer and also mouth and tongue cancer too, and also head and neck.
Wow. So it's really a massive problem, HPV on its own. And then when it has a certain strain, then actually it evolves into cancer for both men and women as well. Tell me, what did you develop as a non-invasive solution for testing?
We developed a sanitary pad for collecting menstruation blood to detect HPV non-invasively. So it's a sanitary pad. We just use that just like a regular pad. And inside the pad, there is a chip. The chip will collect the cervical cells and the HPV virus. And after collecting the virus, the chip will be analyzed in a designated medical laboratory. So after using the pad, you have to ship the pad to one of our certified laboratories, and they will do the analysis. And you will receive the report 3 days after the sample arrived in the laboratory. So no more pain, non-invasive, and very easy to use.
And how often should you use it? You don't have to use it every month, right?
Just once per year, just like screening for cervical cancer once a year. But if you test it positive, then we recommend you to use this like every 6 months until you see negative results.
Okay, amazing. This is going to be such a game changer for so many women. Because you mentioned earlier that even though you have a free perk to do a pap smear, you decided not to. And I think if you look at general screening rates in Hong Kong, they are very, very low. What do you think are the main concerns of women in Hong Kong to get screened every year?
The screening rate in Hong Kong is around 30%. the regular screening rate. And the screening rate is very low, like what you said. And what's blocking the women in Hong Kong to get screened? First, I think the super busy schedule, because most clinics, they open only from Monday to Friday. And because we are having time off on Saturday and Sunday, but we still have many things to deal with, like families, like also friends gathering, and also personal matter, etc. So basically, we have no time. And we also cannot afford like taking half day off or one day off just for doing a pap smear. So this is one of the main reasons. Second is because the cervical cancer screening, the pap smear, the invasive procedure. Sometimes the women, the first time they took the pap smear.
Yeah.
And after that, they never go back again to do the pap smear again because the procedure is just not comfortable and they think it's very embarrassing. So pap smear itself sometimes really hindering women to do a regular check in her later life. Mainly these two reasons, I guess, in Hong Kong, and that's why the screening rate is super low. One more, I think maybe we don't have enough education too.
Yeah, so that was going to be my next question, because I'm originally from the Netherlands, from Europe, and basically we get like a cervical cancer kit in the mail once you are of a certain age so that you can actually do this, take a swab at home. But from a very young age, basically, once you become sexually active, you're encouraged to have a pap smear.
Oh.
It is kind of ingrained in our kind of being from a very young age that the only way to kind of make sure that there's early detection is if you get screened. But I have a feeling there is some of that education maybe lacking or maybe provided in a different way. Can you share a little bit how the education process around the need for screening and early detection is in Hong Kong?
I think the education is, let me think, because when I was a kid in Hong Kong or like when I was studying in high school, I never heard about HPV or cervical cancer. And no one mentioned that we have to do any like HPV or STD screening regularly. So I think the education is insufficient in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And I remember that maybe last year I went to school to deliver the sexual health talk and I collected a bunch of questions of students. And for this topic, they have many, many questions that they don't know where they can get the answer. So I think we need more, establish more and more platform for the students, to the teenagers, to find out the answers for these sex health related questions, because sometimes they don't want to ask their parents because in Hong Kong it's like not that open. And sometimes their parents just avoid answering them directly. Like, yeah, I have a very special personal experience. I remember when I was like 19 years old doing a summer job at a tutorial center, and that day, the boss has to teach a topic. It's like in a under the general knowledge. So it's about teaching the students about sex and reproductions. And that boss was the teacher, the responsible for teaching this lesson. But it seems that he's so embarrassed. And then he just talked to me and say, okay, Miss Troy, maybe it's your turn to teach this session, teach them about sex, knowledge, etc. And I was, thinking, wow, why they avoid talking about sex in front of the teenagers? Because they are those that really need this kind of knowledge.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to manage their health and they don't know like what action can prevent them from getting badly like STD diseases.
Yeah.
So definitely, I think Hong Kong needs much more education about sex and reproductive system.
Because I think that is also, you touched on it. I think apart from the education of teenagers just around their sexual health and wellness and just making them aware of the fact that there are sexual transmissible diseases that they can actually pick up and spread, by the way. But I have a feeling that there is a lot of shame that is also hindering people from going to the doctor, right? So actually telling somebody that you have HPV or talking to your doctor about HPV is still a big taboo. And I think this is also a problem, because if we're not talking about these topics, we cannot address the issues and support people. And that's where I think your product could really have a very big impact, because effectively, you can do this anonymously, right?
Yeah, can be 100% anonymous.
Can you share a little bit what the user experience would look like? I understand they can now buy the product online or at Manning's.
The user experience, they think is very convenient first, because then now they can obtain it to the Manning's pharmacies. And their privacy is very protected. Why? Because now they can buy by themselves.
Yeah.
They don't need any professionals to be involved in the whole purchasing process. Second, you just have to fill in the consent form and then ship the sample back to the laboratory. They can do it without telling anyone. And the consent form, we just require them to fill in an email address in order to receive the electronic report from the laboratory. So the comments from the customers is they think their data is protected first. They are not worrying whether the data will be leaked to some third party or someone will know that they are doing these tests. And second is they think it didn't take them a lot of time because they just use the pad, just like a regular pad. The thing is they have to find a Sunfone pickup store to ship the pad. That's the only thing that they have to like pay a little bit effort into. And the whole process to them is like private and easy and also time saving.
Yeah, it really democratizes the health and well-being of a lot of women. So thank you on behalf of all of us. Are you partnering with any organizations or healthcare kind of professional and providers to kind of grow and market the product further?
We do. So now we partner with two medical groups. One is the EPAS Medical Center, and the second one is AMG Medical Centers. And we are talking with other medical centers too and see if our product could be involved to be included in some female's health checking package. Because women, they don't want to take pap smear, they can choose our product in the package. And the one that want to take pap smear, they can go with pap smear. So now they have choice. And we also partner with some NGOs, because we want the product to be used by different women. So we set up a social impact program too, and sponsoring PEDEX, the PAD to the NGOs. So women from low-income families, women with special needs, some marginalized women, they can also use our sanitary PAD for doing regular cervical screening.
Yeah.
And what's more is we work with some corporates, like some hotels, and we regularly deliver health talk to them to raise the awareness on female reproductive health and also sexual health. And through these talks, we will promote more about the importance of screening HPV and also cervical cancer.
Yeah. So at the moment, the product is only available in Hong Kong, right? So what is kind of your long-term vision for Women X? Is it going to go global?
Yeah, of course. We are planning to go global and we are preparing for that. So now we are filing the regulatory approval from US and also China, and also getting the CE mark too for the entry of Europe. And our target is to make it available to every woman in this world. So when we get these approvals, we definitely will bring the product to US, Europe, Middle East, Southeast Asia, and China.
Amazing. Okay, here we go. Women X goes global.
Yeah.
Yes. I think one of the challenges that we always see in companies is that people get really excited about the end product. But I think a lot of people do not appreciate kind of the years of development and progress that you had to go through to actually create the pad. So can you talk a little bit around what are kind of the key challenges that you had as a founder and how you overcame them?
Well, there are a lot of challenges in developing pet eggs. The key challenge is about producing pet eggs.
Oh, okay.
So it's about the manufacturing process. Because we are scientists and we know very well about how to find out markers, how to collect the biomolecules and how to produce materials for suitable for this process. This is our expertise. So this part is easier for us. But when we enter the next stage, we have to incorporate the technology into the pad, the sanitary pad itself. We find it super difficult because we have no knowledge about making pads. And I remember at that time, we buy some pads available on the market, and then we cut it with scissors, tear it off. And then this is the first time that I see, okay, at the first time I understand pads is not the same as what I imagined in my past 30-something years life. Because in the past, I thought that pads is just like a piece of cotton. That's all. By the time I cut the pads and I found out that there are many layers and they also have some like polymers, they have some textile structure. So starting from there, and we start to analyze each layers, what kind of material, what is the pore size?
Oh, wow.
What is the water absorption rate? And then we buy the material from the factory and then try to assemble the materials into a pad shape. And the next thing is we have to figure out how to put the layers together. And so that time we need to buy a sanitary pad machine.
Mm.
This is also something out of our expertise because it belongs to like mechanics and electronics things. So we partner with a mask factory with experience in picking machines, and they know how to use ultrasound to put the layers together. So we partner with them and then started to order a machine, order the materials, and then started to assemble sanitary pad. Then next, we try to put the chip into the sanitary pad. This is another skill set. Although it's using the same machine, but it's totally different. You have to align the timing in order to put the chip into the middle. Otherwise, it will be somewhere else, but not in the middle. So it's another skill set. And we have to master that before we insert the chip into the pad. And what more is we have to find a clean room for producing the pads for clinical study. And I remember I talked to more than like 10, I think I talked to more than 20 mask factories in Hong Kong in order to find one suitable clean room for this manufacturing. So it's super hard because in Hong Kong, we don't have a lot of factories. Mainly for food manufacturing, food packaging, drugs packagings, or food manufacturings. But until before COVID, I think we don't have any factories for making textile products. And the sanitary pad actually belongs to textile products productions. So my feeling was like, we are building up something from zero, and there's a lot of trial and error. So for making the regular sanitary pads, we modified the layerings 4 times. Yeah, from 1.0 to 4.0. Because from 1.0 to 3.0, the third 3 times, we put wrong materials into the pad. So multiple defects happen. So it causes some like water leakage.
Oh my God.
Or the glue cannot stick on the bottom layer of the bacteria pad. Yeah. And at that time, there's a lot of disappointment because my whole team was thinking, it's not that easy that we can master it. So there was time that we want to give up because it's not easy to master and to spend a lot of money and time and effort in order to master the sanitary pad producing skills. But we keep it up, and because also encouragement and support from all other parties. So we insist until we make a pad that can fully function and put it onto the market. So I think this is one of the biggest challenges that we have throughout the whole development process. I think converting a biotech into a real product is not easy because we need to like assemble it into a physical product.
Yeah,
because for biochemists, we always like, for the technology is usually confined in the laboratory, but not merging it with a real consumer product, making it available to everyone.
Well, I'm happy you persisted, but I can imagine it's very hard. We didn't talk about it, but you started your company in the Hong Kong Science and Technology Park, right? Where you were incubated in the Incubio program?
Yeah.
How has that kind of helped you with the setup of your company and the launch of your product?
So in Science Park, I joined two incubation programs. The first one is an ideation program. At that time, I just have an idea. So I don't have any prototype. I don't have any research data yet. I just have a business proposal and also a pitch deck. Then at that time, I applied for the ideation program and they admit me and give me $100,000 Hong Kong dollars to start with this project. And then I spend this $100,000 to work on the research experiments and also file some patents for the idea. So this is the money support. And I remember during the ideation program, they also have 10 trainings. They teach you how to open a company, how to allocate shares, how to set up option pools for the staff, and also how to fine-tune the business model, making it a market product fit model, and also teach us how to establish partnerships with different people, etc., to make sure that the ideation stage goes smoothly in the first year. So after the ideation stage, I use the data that I collected and also use the patent that I filed. I apply for the incubation program. So incubation program, they give more support and also more subsidies. They are giving out like from 1.5 million Hong Kong dollar to 6 million. And the program that I joined is IncuBio, especially for biotechnology. And for IncuBio, they are giving me 6 million monthly support, 2 million for the FDA approval applications, and 4 million for R&D development. So what's more is because ScienceBus is well connected with different parties and stakeholders in Hong Kong and also well connected with the Hong Kong government. So there is a lot of business development opportunities. For example, I remember occasionally I received some program invitations. For example, like from Hong Kong Airport, they are calling for some new technology to solve certain problems happening at the airport. So we can submit proposals and present our ideas to these government-related authority. And if they adapt the solutions, we can run the pilot and then we could continue the business with them after the pilot too. So there's business development support, also funding support. And what's more important is I met a lot of funders at Science Park. So that's from different areas, like from AI, from engineering, from doing like art, crypto, NFT, biotech, of course. And I feel that we are all in the same ecosystem and we all support each other. And because we have friends, we can gather together when we are having tough time. And yeah, it's easier to survive, you know, with more funders around, better than just by oneself.
Well, I think we don't talk about that enough. I think the journey of a founder can be very, very lonely. And it is great that you find in the Science Park kind of fellow founders that you can connect with and share some of your experiences. I think the other challenges that founders have is because they are so passionate and so driven to kind of work on their projects and their companies, that it also tends to be a 24/7 kind of engagement, right? So a lot of founders are experiencing burnouts and, you know, really have to take care of themselves. So on that note, you know, what advice would you give other entrepreneurs that are looking to start their own company or enter into the women's health space?
Oh, my first advice is you really have to know what is your passion. So passion wins first, because I believe no one can survive this journey without passion. Yeah, it's really like a 24/7 working conditions, like no holidays, not much sleep. And also because there are up times and also down times, and you have to get through all of the challenges. And without the passion and without the goal, you will never get there. So the first thing is I encourage all the founders to find out their passion, what they really want to do and what they really want to change. And then work on this and then look at the goal and then head towards the goal. So the first thing. The second thing is, of course, I want to more founders to be involved in femtech development. Yeah, you mentioned that it's kind of lonely, right? I remember when I was like at the very beginning of running WomenX, there wasn't a lot of femtech companies or ideas in Hong Kong. And I remember one time SCMP came and talked to me during an interview, and she was asking me, can you count the femtech companies in Hong Kong? And then I tried counting my fingers, and then perhaps we only have three in Hong Kong. One is Luna.
Yeah.
And then one is WomenX.
Yeah.
And I trying really hard to find out the third one. And I think maybe this one working on IVF. That's all. And I remember during that time when I explained inventing a pad for detecting female diseases, I remember many mentors and their managers, they also comments that they think the solution may not work very well, and they think better to think about a solution that both women and men can use rather than just focusing on
something for women.
Yeah, because like you're having just like 50% of the whole populations, so 50% less customer, what they are explaining is. And not like other solutions like fintech solutions, they are targeting the whole population rather than just 50% of the customer. But I think that the fintech, we need more fintech solutions because the thing is, because no one is working on that, so we have to work on that.
Exactly.
And when women don't have alternatives, we have to be the one that bring the alternatives to women. And so there's many, many times during interview or events, occasions, reporters ask me about any plans, or investors, they ask me any plans to expand the technology to detect male diseases. And every time I answer, at this stage, at this moment, we are still focusing on developing products for women only, because I think there is an urgent need for that. So that's why I also encourage, like, if you are a woman and you are thinking about an idea to work on, or you're thinking about to open a company, open a tech company, I invite you to work on femtech related solutions or femtech related industry. So we together can build more things, more tech, more products for women to solving their urgent needs.
Thank you. I say amen to that. As you rightfully pointed out, you know, you need a thick skin as well to stay on track and on the path to develop your product, because there's going to be a lot of people along the way that will tell you that it's not going to work, that people are not going to buy it, that people are not interested. But I think we are all very grateful for all the work that you do, Hua, for women. And I can only echo what your message about hopefully more. Both men and women are interested in starting a startup that works on solutions for 50% of the population, because there is a big gap in the market that is waiting to be filled. So thank you so much, Hua, for being the guest on my podcast today. I really, really enjoyed the conversation, and congratulations again on the official launch of the PadX Pad. And if you enjoyed this episode, if you like this series, Femtech at Work, please like and subscribe to my channel for more or previous episodes. Thank you, Hua.
Thank you so much, Micah, for having me, and very happy to share like Femtech and also PadX with everyone listening to the podcast. Please follow Micah's channel.
Thank you.